This is 90.9 WBUR. Good morning. I'm Bob Oakes. President Obama is calling for honest dialogue about race at the memorial service in Dallas yesterday for five police officers ambushed during a demonstration last week. The president said honest conversation is the antidote to the violence and despair set off by the killings of two black men last week by police in Louisiana and Minnesota, incidents that preceded what followed in Dallas.
If we cannot talk honestly and openly, not just in the comfort of our own circles, but with those who look different than us or bring a different perspective, then we will never break this dangerous cycle.
Those seven deaths last week, far from Boston, remain the source of confusion and frustration for many families in Greater Boston. Parents are trying to figure out what to say to children, especially African-American children, about justice, safety, and progress. We discuss these concerns with three parents. The Reverend Cheryl Harris is an African-American woman who's a Baptist minister and diversity consultant from Attleboro. David Harris, no relation, is African-American and managing director of the Charles Hamilton Houston Institute for Race and Justice at Harvard Law School. And Michael Fitzgerald, a white man with two mixed-race sons, is the articles editor for the Boston Globe magazine. The Reverend Harris opened by telling us about a short conversation she had last week with her 22-year-old grandson.
Within hours of the deaths in Louisiana and in Minnesota, he called me. He calls me Nani, and he says, "Nani, we need to talk about this. What's happening here?" And then he said, "I'm so sorry we have to talk about this in 2016 because this should be behind us." And so we had this conversation of his anguish, and it was full of that. And then we got to this place after some weeping where I said, "Well, Daquan, it's important for you to remember what to do. You know what to do, right? You have to, if you get stopped by the police, you put your hands at 10 and 2 on the wheel. You sit quietly. You comply with what they ask you to do." And he cut me off and he said, "Nani, I could do all of that and still get killed." That was so painful. We have to come together and say enough.
David Harris, as I understand it, you've had many talks over the years with your son about safety. How have those conversations gone up till now?
You know, those conversations become routine. I mean, I think he understands these things. But as he gets older, you know, he's 16 now, and that's an interesting age when young people are inclined to push boundaries and what have you. I do think that the events of the last week or two have changed the conversation.
I was going to ask if they've altered the conversation. Yeah. How so, do you think?
You know, I think they call for a different conversation. I'll share with you how I first heard of any of this. We let our son stay up after we go to bed, and we write him notes when we go to bed for things to do in the morning. And so we got up the other day, and he left a note. It said, "Google Alton Sterling." He said, quote, "It happened again." You know, my wife and I looked at each other and we thought, oh, this is some sports or music thing. Had no idea what it was. We went and Googled it. And I was truly shaken because I realized that my son went to sleep having seen this video, having been traumatized by this video. And it really calls for a different conversation about who we are as a society. You know, as he goes through the anger, the confusion, the disappointment that it happens again. It happened again.
Since you use the word this way, I want to ask it this way. Has it made it less safe for your son to be out there?
One of the ways I think it makes it less safe is that his attitude toward the police is hardening. He and other young people might be less inclined to be as cautious. He feels that he has rights that should not and cannot be denied, and you know, and it's hard to tell him to exercise the kind of caution and not give in to his anger.
Mike Fitzgerald, you have written that when you had your sons, you didn't see them as black or white, but you were keenly aware of race. What have you learned?
I realized this past week, I said, you know, I really haven't been thinking very much about this. I haven't been talking much about it. It's not something that my boys and I have really been engaged with. And here it is again. And why have I been ignoring this? You know, I welled up with tears, and I thought, you know, you really cannot ignore this the way that you've been ignoring it.
Mr. Harris, as horrific as the recent shootings have been, they're frankly the latest in a string that have occurred for many, many, many years. Are they the extreme tip of the iceberg for the experience of young black men in America?
I'm afraid they're actually far too typical, and that's what allows them to be referred to as it. And I think about my own son, his teenage years, those formative years, have been colored by these experiences. And as we know, these are just the ones we hear about. We did some plays last spring about lynching.
You know, when you say we showed some plays,
the Charles Hamilton Houston Institute at Harvard Law School put on these plays. You know, lynching to me conjures certain things for each of us, for black people and for white people. One of the things about lynching is that lynching was about spectacle. It was about picnics around hanging black bodies, burned black bodies. And what really bothers me and worries me is that these videotaped murders approach that level of spectacle. Seeing these videos over and over and over again, and it's frightening. And to the extent that we haven't addressed this, to the extent that it happens again and again, it looks like accepted spectacle. I don't know how we as a society heal from this.
The place where I go is history. I was at a Black Lives Matter meeting for the first time last week, and I heard the terror and the trauma of those young black people who were saying essentially nothing is changing. And yet we know that there has been change and there has been progress. It's not enough. We're not where we need to be, but we're certainly not where we were. And I think if we can remember that, it will help us to get out of this place of despair.
You know, we've been talking a lot about how you view this through the eyes of your kids, so to speak. Mm. Can I ask you each to respond to how you've personally taken this? Have the recent episodes made you outraged, angry, exasperated, exhausted? Have they made you more fearful for yourself?
You know, I've never committed a crime. And any time a police car is behind me, I tense up. Growing up black in America, you just learn through experience to be a little afraid of the police. And I know that there are good police officers. There are many. But for the stories that we've heard growing up, it's tough. So when I heard these last couple of deaths, I still weep. I have tears in my eyes even now. So the sadness and the despair that I feel personally as a mom, as a grandmother, is profound. And I am angry. I'm angry that it's still going on. And I'm angry that people are still trying to excuse behavior rather than say, having someone pinned down on the street and shot six times, regardless of whatever's going on, this is wrong. So, all of those emotions. And yet, I hold out hope.
Michael?
I was filled with dread Friday. I actually happened to be awake and looking at internet news sources when I should have been sleeping, and I was just filled with dread at what happened in Dallas and compounding what had happened earlier in the week.
David?
So, again, the response is complex, and it's really difficult for me to isolate my response from thinking about my son, to tell you the truth. One of the real difficulties, one of the hardest things for me is to realize that I have spent my entire career working to try to make this a better place. Our son is our only son, right? And I'm discouraged. What's the world I'm leaving him? When I think about his sitting up at night, you know, kind of consuming this by himself, you know, I think about what's going to happen to him when I'm not there. What's this world going to do to him when I'm not there? And I can't talk to him about it or protect him.
You're getting a little emotional.
It's a very difficult thing. I think about the 8 years we've had with Barack Obama as president. I think about the hope I had at the beginning of that administration. We as a country haven't taken advantage of the opportunity he gave us. When he was elected, my posture was, this doesn't free us from talking about race. This frees us to talk about race. And we have failed. We have failed miserably. And it's our children who are going to pay. It's the hurt that we continue to put on ourselves. And I don't know the healing process. I don't.
Cheryl Harris, Baptist minister who runs a consultancy firm out of Attleboro. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
David Harris, no relation to Cheryl, is the managing director of the Charles Hamilton Houston Institute for Race and Justice at Harvard Law School. Thanks a lot for coming in.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Michael Fitzgerald, articles editor for the Boston Globe magazine. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.